All right, welcome everybody. Masterclass tonight on March 9th at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's good to have you all here. Looking forward to everything we got going on tonight. We have quite a list of people this evening. And let's see, we have Marcello, Fernando, Adelaida, Dax, Maria, and Karen. Quite busy this evening. I love their topics too. So let's start with Marcello. Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
All right. Go ahead and share your screen and take it over.
Oh, give me one second. I've got this Mac. Just trying to share it. Never did this before. Oh, cool. Okay. What is going on? Right, does everybody see my screen? Hello?
No.
No. Okay, why is it not showing? Okay, what is going on? It's not showing. Okay, do y'all see it now? What is?
No.
Can you go to the next person? It's telling me I gotta update drivers.
Oh,
I'm
yeah, no
sorry.
problem. No, that's fine.
Thank you.
Fernando, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Let me see if my share work.
Right.
Hi, anybody can see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, I got a quick question because I think in the other class I saw having some issue. I got a video that I'm gonna play. Do I need to do anything to share the audio?
Yes, when you click after you click share up in the top corner that you've done, you do have to click
Toggle that says share with audio, share with computer
share with
audio.
computer audio. Yeah.
It didn't give me no options. Let me see.
It says include computer sound at the very top corner of that share content.
Now let me see. Let me try stop sharing again.
When,
So I click sharing, correct?
yeah, click share, and then on
Okay.
that share content page right next
Oh,
to it.
okay. I see. I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So let's start. All right. I just want to start apologizing to everybody because I'm being sick. So I don't know if you guys can hear me clear.
You sound good. Sound better than me.
All right. I'm going to talk about tonight about network design for a small business or homes. I've been working pretty much so many years in the hotels and business, and I see, they always are dead areas or dead spot, where you lose connections. So today I just want to bring to everybody, like just to remember, like how we do the design for a network and the things that we need to consider, when we choose for routers for a business and either for our homes or the Wi-Fi, which everybody uses more often to connect their device. Computer network infrastructure. The computer network infrastructure is the backbone of any business. All your devices, applications, software, and most of your work are supported by you buy or build up to the most computer network. Therefore, planning, design, purchasing hardware and security for your business computer network need to be a high priority for your business. List of the devices you needed to set up a computer network for your business. And make a list of the stuff that you needed for your business, like modems, routers, firewall, switch, LAN cable, patch cable, access point, a repeater and patch panel. How to choose a router for a business? Most of the ISPs, internet service provider, usually give you a free router when you buy any subscriptions. However, these routers are not the best for your users. Counting the numbers of devices connected to your network is not always simple. Desktop, laptop, and mobile devices aren't the only device on your network. Here's what you need to do to include it on your calculations. We can consider desktop, laptop, tablets, smartphones, network printers, VoIP phone system, conference rooms equipment, POS systems, IP cameras, and guest devices. I want to introduce, or want to suggest, a 3G Wi-Fi 6 router, AX3200. It offers 6 independent SSIDs that offer the 2 4 gigabit speed and the 5 gigabit speed. It also have 8 high antennas and beamforming technology provided. High performance, even for a large home, up to 3,000 square feet. There is not more dead spot from the door or to the backyard. This router allows to connect up to 128 devices. The next is the access point. When multiple devices using the same network, overcrowding occurs as the all components to connect to the same router access point. This means low quality or buffering during streaming, latency during the gaming, and frustrating slow browsing speed. With the increase of the IoT, it requires to any network to look for a better connectivity. The TP-Link Deco AX3000 Wi-Fi 6 mesh system covers all the right places. Immerse your whole home and business in a powerful Wi-Fi, no matter the size or the shape. 2 units work together to provide cover up to 65 square feet, ensuring you have uninterrupted Wi-Fi from one end to the other end. It also provides AI-driving smart mesh, always learning, constantly optimizing, armed with AI-driving smart mesh. They call X55 deliver smart Wi-Fi that follow you wherever you are without interruptions. It automatically learns your network environment, client quality, and user behavior. This Wi-Fi allows you to connect up to 150 devices and offer 155 square feet. And next, I want to share with you guys is the Unified Design Center. Unified Design Center is a powerful visualization and planning tool that allows you to simulate and complete unified system for free. With using this software, it allows you to consider how much cable do you need it, what is your dead spot, what type of the system do you need it, and they can ship in all the stuff directed to your business. And the next, and this follow video, it highlighted the key feature with the Unified Design Center that will help you plan to your next network.
Welcome to Unified Design Center, a powerful visualization and planning tool that allows you to simulate a complete Unify IT deployment. Every detail, including cabling, Wi-Fi access points, surveillance cameras, phone systems, door access points, and more, can be visualized within a single guided interface. And when you're ready to start your deployment, Design Center will also add everything you choose to your basket and ship it directly to you. Begin by simply uploading your floor plan. You can upload multiple floor plans for larger or multi-floor deployments. Adjust the ceiling height and scale of your space to ensure accurate measurement of cabling and coverage. By specifying the materials of all inner, outer, and dividing walls, you will be able to visualize the Wi-Fi strength in every corner of your deployment. Once your floor plan is calibrated, you can begin selecting your unified devices from the multiple different categories and placing them in their ideal locations. Routers, switches, access points, cameras, door access, phones, as well as our LED lights and dimmer switches, are all available for your planning. With the auto cable function, you can automatically connect all your devices to a server rack or switches, with the added satisfaction of choosing the type of cable you would like to use. From multi-floor cabling, right-click anywhere on the screen to create links or tunnels between floors. You can also view the rack-mountable devices in a virtual server rack to check port utilization and power consumption. Additionally, you can draw out your own pre-existing or ideal cable routes. This will help you more closely estimate the amount of cable necessary for your entire deployment. If you're adding a Unify Protect camera system, not only do you get to know the amount of cable needed, but with the visual filters, you have the added ability to see the precise angle at which each camera should be placed, eliminating blind spots and saving you time mounting your hardware. Now that you've built your network and camera security deployment complete with cabling, double check to make sure you're not missing anything by utilizing the topology map and visual filters. Topology will configure your entire deployment arrangement and chart out exactly how your devices will connect together. This will help guarantee you have everything necessary for an effective network, as well as inform you of the cost and scalability of what you've chosen. And with the visual settings, you can prevent dead zones by getting a first-hand look at the difference between the 2.4 and 5 gigahertz signal strengths in your space. You've just designed your dream deployment. Now let us help with the rest. We compile an entire bill of materials of everything you added to your space. Design Center can also help you add the necessary accessories, such as patch cables, to your cart. Check out and we will ship everything straight to you. Whether you're adding to an existing system or creating one from scratch, Unify Design Center is a convenient, full-featured, and completely free tool that anyone can use. First time? Let us guide you. We will walk you through every part of the process, eliminating any stress or confusion. Tooltips, complete with video tutorials, are available to help assure your entire planning process is as effortless as possible. Take a look into the future at design.ui.com.
And that's it.
Thank you so much. I actually went on that, and since I've been trying to wire my house, it's really something to look at. I might just sign up just to see if I can wire something for my house.
Yes, we I used it for my house because I had too many dead spots.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really like it.
Yeah, that's us too. And that's the problem, because I know that wire, at least the desktops should be wired. We can leave Wi-Fi for everything else, but I'm always fighting with the Wi-Fi. So I think wiring up some computers might be really nice. That's really nice. That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
What a great idea. Marcello, are you ready or should I go to the next person?
I think I'm ready to rock.
All right. Try it out.
All right. All right. Everybody can see the presentation, right?
I do. I see it.
Awesome. All right, let me get it started. Come on, moving slow. All right, there we go. All right, my I want to give a shout out to Mr. Michael Rhines. Today is his birthday, and he is actually in the class with us. Today is his birthday, and I think this is both of our last classes before graduation. So I'll be moving on. All right. My introduction is we're going to be talking about ComSec and crypto. What is ComSec / crypto and access requirements and roles explained? All right. Crypto. I'm not going to read off the slide. I'm not going to pretty much try to bore everybody. So crypto is pretty much the marketing and designators of identifying ComSec material and also equipment. So with that being said, I know we're in the cyber security field. A lot of people are in that field. So a lot of people will be dealing with ComSec. ComSec is a short acronym for the words communication security. It's a broad term used to describe the measures and controls taken to deny access or authorize personnel's information. Authorized persons' information derived from technical communications and ensuring the authenticity of such telecommunications. Please bear with me. I got a an accent, so please bear with me. All right, here are a couple terms that we're going to talk about, which is crypto security, transmission security, emissions security, traffic flow security, physical security of ComSec equipment. Here's the terms and definition of crypto security. Here are a few points that's very important about the crypto security. Take the time to get familiarized with the terms and also the definitions. Okay, the thing to remember when dealing with ComSec, security clearance is always key. Security clearance and a need to know. A need to know derives is pretty much, in layman's terms, it's pretty much a person who has the need to know, meaning like if it deals with your job, it deals with anything that you're dealing with, like a contract or anything. If you have to have access to ComSec, then you basically have a need to know. Everybody understand? If not, raise your hand, then I can go further in depth. All right, next slide. Emission security and traffic flow security. Here's the terms with those. A lot of people probably wouldn't deal with any emissions based off of they probably won't be in those roles. 9 times out of 10, if you deal with ComSec, it's pretty much loading and distributing ComSec. Here's your traffic flow security also, the terms. All right, here's the access requirements. Like I was saying, security clearance is the number one thing. Security clearance, whether it's top secret clearance, a secret clearance, a top secret SCI clearance, sometimes a poly clearance, meaning you have to get your fingerprints done. Also, you have to be a U.S. citizen. You cannot be a non-U.S. citizen to touch ComSec. Most ComSec comes from the NSA. Moving on, here's the continuation of the actual access requirements. Also, the NSA is the controlling office of records, meaning all information is pretty much policies, documentations, regulations, guidelines. Everything comes from NSA. Next slide. Here's a few of the roles. The main role is the ComSec custodian. The ComSec custodian is pretty much the person who issues ComSec. He issues, he receipts ComSec transfers, he does accounting, safeguarding, destruction of all ComSec material, and also he's assigned to a ComSec account. The hand receipt holder. The hand receipt holder is the personnel that the ComSec custodian gives the equipment or gives the key to. The key is the actual ComSec. He gives this information to the person. That person is now held reliable for any lost ComSec, any ComSec that becomes compromised, or any ComSec that is destroyed ahead of time or late. These are his duties. Take your time to understand those. Also, this person has to follow all regulations and guidelines dealing with that ComSec. The ComSec carrier, that's pretty much the person who delivers ComSec to the ComSec account manager. 9 times out of 10, that ComSec carrier will sign for the ComSec from NSA or from any organization that made that ComSec. And that's pretty much the end of my class. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you have any questions, please send it in the chat and I can answer it. That's all I have.
Thank you. I wasn't aware of a lot of that, so that's nice to know.
All right.
Great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm trying to end. There we go.
All right, so Adelaida.
Hey, everyone.
Hello, you ready?
I think I am.
Okay.
Mosquito sound. Make sure that's checked. Okay. And you guys see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Hey everyone, in today's presentation, I will be going through a Smartsheet 101. Let's jump in by going through the main objectives of this presentation. We'll start with an introduction to Smartsheet. We'll then go into the different features and benefits Smartsheet offers, how to use Smartsheet, and finally, we'll wrap up the presentation. Let's start with an introduction to Smartsheet. Smartsheet is a software as a service offering for collaboration and work management developed and marketed by Smartsheet Incorporated. It has a lot of benefits, such as tracking tasks, tracking project progress, managing calendars, sharing documents, and managing other work using a tabular user interface. You can see an example of a project plan to the right, which is just one way users utilize Smartsheet. But there's definitely many other ways that team members can come in. This could be used by HR, used by marketing, or a promotion that they might be running, content that they're trying to put up on the websites. It can also just be a task tracker for team members. So there's definitely many different uses that a company can have and use for Smartsheet. Next, let's talk about different features of Smartsheet. So let's start with the first main feature, which is collaboration. So one of the big selling points that Smartsheet has is that they allow for users to make updates that are quickly relayed to other team members in real time, as well as allowing team members to receive notifications on those updates that have been made. So again, real-time updates are allowing team members to see changes to a sheet or project as they happen, and then notifications are able to be configured in Smartsheet to alert team members when specific events occur. So this is kind of like automation, which we'll get into a little bit later. But this could be when a new task is added to a sheet or when a task is due. A notification through email, text message will be sent to a team member so they are notified and they can take a look at the Smartsheet. Another great feature Smartsheet offers is around project management. So Smartsheet's Gantt chart feature allows users to create visual project timelines that show the start and end dates of tasks and how they relate to one another. And this is a really big advantage when you're running for project management. So this specific feature itself is just very helpful. And again, this helps team members understand the overall project timeline, identify dependencies and critical paths, and adjust schedules as needed. So not only does Smartsheet offer Gantt charts and timelines, but they also have resource allocation, which can better help managers understand where their employees' time is going and see if they are over or under allocated during a certain time. Again, project management as a whole, a lot of team members, companies utilize Smartsheet for this reason, similar to like Microsoft projects. So very helpful tool for project management. Continuing on with different features that users are able to use in relation to project management, Smartsheet also provides a range of task and project templates that users can customize to suit their specific needs. The example pictured over to the right, we can see different examples of project management templates, including templates for budgets, project launch plans, project tracking rollup, and a lot more. This can save time and ensure consistency across all projects for the organization. Next, let's talk about project dashboards and reports. Smartsheet's project dashboards and reports provide a high-level view of project progress, allowing team members and stakeholders to quickly understand the status of the project and identify any potential issue. This allows for team members, project managers to quickly find potential risks to projects and try to figure out a potential mitigation if needed or talk to a team members that might be able to help with that. It also just, again, at a high level, allows C-suite level team members to see a roll up of how all the projects across the organization are doing at that time. Next big feature, we can discuss is data management. So the first item on here is spreadsheets and forms. So Smartsheets, spreadsheets, and forms allow team members to collect and manage data in a structured, organized format. Spreadsheets can be customized to suit specific needs, while forms can be used to collect data from external sources. Another feature with data management is the data import and export. So Smartsheet allows users to import data from a variety of sources, including Excel spreadsheets, Google Sheets, and other third-party tools. So users can also export data from Smartsheet and share this with other team members or use in other applications. Continuing on with more data management, the next feature are reports and dashboards. So these features specifically provide a high-level view of data and can help teams identify trends, patterns, and areas for improvement. Reports can be customized to suit specific needs, while dashboards can be used to monitor key metrics and KPIs in real time. So this is one of my favorite features of Smartsheet, which is automated workflows. This allows teams to automate repetitive or manual tasks, such as sending notifications or updating project statuses. Workflows can be customized to suit specific needs and can be triggered by a variety of events, such as when a new row is added to a sheet or when a specific date is reached across multiple applications, which reduces manual effort and increases efficiency. And to the right here, you can see that there's different templates that Smartsheet already offers team members. One example that I think is great is they allow you to alert teams in different channels like Microsoft Teams. So again, any of these sort of automations can be sent via email to a certain like other social platform of Teams or text messages, depending on how the user wants to receive them. But continuing on with automation, there's also conditional formatting. And this feature basically allows teams to automatically format cells based on specific criteria, such as highlighting overdue tasks in red or changing the background color of cell based on the value of another cell. This can help team members quickly identify issues or trends in the data. So there's also formulas and functions. So similar to Excel, Smartsheet also offers different formulas and functions that allow teams to perform calculations and manipulate data automatically. So one example, teams can use formulas to calculate the sum or average of a range of cells or to calculate the difference between two dates. And then there's also integration. So Smartsheet integrates with a variety of different third-party tools. Some examples are like Salesforce, Jira, and Tableau. This allows teams to automate processes and share data across multiple applications, reducing the manual effort and increasing efficiency. So after taking a look at features, let's now dive into the benefits of using Smartsheet. We already talked about features that these are kind of in relation with, but Smartsheet improves collaboration. So this allows, right, this tool allows team members to collaborate more effectively, providing a centralized location for project information and facilitating communication and feedback. There's also increased efficiency while using Smartsheet. This is due to automation, those features that they have that we already discussed, and data management tools, which can help teams save time and reduce manual effort, allowing them to focus on more strategic work. And then also there's more visibility. So reporting, dashboard features, those are providing a high-level view of project status and key metrics, which is allowing team members and stakeholders to quickly understand progress and identify potential issues. Thinking of the benefits, so there's also customization. Smartsheet can be customized to suit specific project needs, allowing teams to create workflows or reports that align with their specific goals and objectives. There's also a lot of flexibility. So Smartsheet can be used for a variety of project types and industries, from marketing and finance to construction and healthcare. There's also mobile access. Smartsheet's mobile app allows team members to access project information and update data from their mobile devices, making it easier to stay connected and productive while on the go. And then lastly, something we had talked about in the features is integration. So again, just due to Smartsheet being able to integrate with different third-party tools, it allows teams to share different data across multiple applications and streamline any of their workflows. Now that we've taken a look at the benefits and features of that Smartsheet has to offer. Let's just run through a quick high level of how to use Smartsheet. So the first step in using Smartsheet is signing up for an account and creating a workspace. So the first step, you're going to want to go to the Smartsheet website, choose a plan. They offer different range of plans. You'll want to create your account, select a plan. You can even start a free trial. You'll need to verify your email, and then you can go in and set up your workspace. And just so everyone's aware, workspace is just a different collection of sheets, reports, and dashboards that you can go in and organize, kind of like a folder system. Once you've created your workspace, you can start creating sheets. So these are pretty much building blocks of Smartsheet. They can be used to manage tasks, track expenses, organize data, and much more. So to create a new sheet, just click on the new button and choose sheet. At this point, you're able to customize your sheets. You can add formulas, additional formatting, run through any other form of automation, right, workflows that you would want to have for your sheets. Once you create a sheet and customize it a bit, you're able to start running through maybe you can update data. So one of the first items here, you can customize columns. So Smartsheet provides a different range of column types, just text, date, drop-down lists. You can also add formulas, additional formatting to automate calculations and highlight important data. At this point, once you customize your columns, you can enter and import data. So if you don't already have an Excel sheet for data, you can just run through and type in data yourself with different grids. Or if you have data from something like Sheets or Excel, you can go in and easily import it. And then as well as that, you can start collaborating on data. So what we've already talked about in this presentation, you're able to collaborate with team members. You can add comments on a row, attachments, provide feedback, and share information. So at this point, continuing on with managing and updating data, once you've gone in, you've created your sheet, you customized your sheet a bit, added some columns, you can start updating data in real time, which we have talked about, which is a feature that Smartsheet offers. This, again, allows you to update via mobile or desktop, and team members will be able to see these updates in real time. You can also automate your data management. So this, again, Smartsheet provides a range of automation tools. So there's alerts, reminders, these help manage your data more efficiently. And you can also use Smartsheet's API to integrate with other tools and automate data transfers. As well as I analyze the data. So once you have it in there, have to take a look at it, right? So Smartsheet offers reporting and dashboards, which we've talked about as a feature. And this allows you, again, to analyze your data and gain insights into these metrics. So now that you've created your workspace, you've created some sheets, at this point, you can start collaborating with team members. So invite your team members. There's a button on the sheet or workspace that you can share. You basically enter in a team member's email address and send them an invite. You can also set different permissions and access levels for each team member as well, such as admin access or commenter, viewer, editor. And then at this point, it's time to start collaborating. Once your team members join, and start adding in comments, having them work through the Smartsheets themselves and making those updates in real time. So finally, let's just go through a quick recap. Taking a quick look again at the features that Smartsheet offers. So there's real-time collaboration and updates, project management tools such as Gantt charts and calendars, data management tools such as customizable columns and import-export capabilities, automation tools such as alerts and reminders, reporting and analytics features such as custom dashboards and reports, integration with other tools and platforms such as Microsoft Office and Salesforce, and also mobile app or on-the-go apps. Let's go over a quick recap of the benefits that we have of using Smartsheet. There's increased productivity and efficiency through real-time collaboration and automation tools, better project management through visual tools like Gantt charts and calendars, improved data management through customizable columns and import-export capabilities, enhanced communication and transparency through commenting and sharing features, greater insights into key metrics. metrics for reporting and analytics features, reduce errors and redundancies through automation tools, and increase accessibility and flexibility through integration with other tools and platforms and multiple access. So let's just take a quick run through for final thoughts and recommendations. So Smartsheet offers a robust set of features and benefits that can help businesses and teams manage projects, track data, and collaborate more effectively. Whether you're a small business owner or part of a large enterprise, Smartsheet can help streamline your workflow and boost productivity. Thank you all again for taking the time to listen to my presentation.
Great job. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Excellent. I like Smartsheets.
Me too.
I think I'll almost like it better than Project.
I've kind of grown up on that with the current job, using Smartsheet. So I actually haven't had to really use Microsoft Projects too much, but it's interesting to hear that you think you might like it a bit more. I'm kind of curious to dip my toes into Microsoft Projects and see what I think about it.
Yeah, because it has the Gantt charts. It has everything like that, too. But it seems like Smartsheets is more streamlined than Project is.
Okay, yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
thank you so much. All right. Dax, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right, take it over.
Does everyone see my slide?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I will be presenting how to use the AWS CLI with LocalStack. LocalStack runs on top of Docker. It's a cloud service that you can run on your laptop or desktop. Runs AWS by default. It does have a plugin for Azure. I'm going to demonstrate how to install each piece. You will see the installation for Docker first and then LocalStack since it runs on top, and then we will install the AWS CLI. Running Ubuntu desktop here, the first step is to run an app update. Don't need that. Okay. Next, we are going to install Docker. And then we can pull the Hello World image to see if Docker's working. And we see the Hello from Docker message there. Next, I will pull the image for LocalStack. Should have used sudo there. Let's see if it is actually running now. We just have the whole world running. Let's okay, now we see that it is running successfully. Next, I will install the AWS CLI. Okay, the next step is to connect the AWS CLI to LocalStack. So we're going to use AWS configure. Okay. The access key, you can leave that blank. The secret access key. I apologize for that. We actually can enter any value here, but we need a value. The region name can be blank. The output format can be blank. To demonstrate, I am going to create an S3 bucket. It's going to be created in US East 1. See the output there where my bucket is created. I'm going to create another bucket named my bucket 2. The next step is we're going to list the buckets in the account. So you'll see my bucket and my bucket 2 listed there. And buckets can also be deleted using the AWS CLI. I'm going to delete my bucket 2. We list the buckets again. We'll see my bucket 2 is no longer there. I'm going to create a file to upload to one of the buckets. I'm just going to do a quick hello to hello.txt. Upload that to my bucket. The upload is complete. And the next step, we will get some information about the file that we uploaded using the AWS CLI. to be my bucket, not my bucket two. That be two dashes, no. I'm going to recreate bucket two. See if that corrects the issue. Not sure what's going on there. That did work when I was practicing in my development environment. Okay, that's all I have for this presentation. Any questions?
That was great, Dax.
I'm sorry that last part did not work. I'll have to figure that out. It should just list the file name, the size, and the type of the file.
Well, thanks for showing it, because we definitely, I don't know how many people knew about this. I didn't. Anything I can learn AWS is good for me.
Yeah, it's great for testing when you're using tools like Terraform or just AWS CLI. You can make sure that it works locally before you try to run it against an actual account and start incurring charges.
Ah, good idea. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Maria, are you ready?
Hi. Yes, I am ready. Should I go to take control, right? Yes. To share my screen? Okay.
Yeah.
I think everyone can see my screen now.
No, actually take control is just covering his. You need to hit share, so it'll stop his sharing. Because take control is just taking control of his screen.
I see.
There you
can
go.
You see it now?
See. Yep. See
okay. It. Okay. So here we go.
Okay. We can't hear it.
You cannot hear it?
No. So when you hit the share, you're going to have to include computer sound at the top of the share box.
Okay, let me stop sharing and then try to share again. Okay, now I see it. Okay, so let's try it again.
It is crucial that we all have good afternoon, everyone. Today I'm going to be talking about the cybersecurity policies. As all we know, cybersecurity threats have become more sophisticated in frequency. It is crucial that we all have robust cybersecurity policies in place to protect our organizations and customer data. Some of the recommendations that I'm going to be making today are a strong password policy, two-factor authorization system, recovery plan, an employee security awareness, and an incident response plan as well. So why having a strong password policy? Considering the factor carefully, people are wearing to be flooded with the password they must remember. Logging, online logins, personal emails, accounts from social media, personal banking, smartphone security codes, and home security alarms all need a password. Developing a robust password strategy is essential for assisting users and protecting the crucial system as they depend on a daily basis. According to Martins, consider these three quick facts supporting a strong password policy requirement. One, 73% of users have the same password for multiple sizes. 33% use the same password every time. Two, every extra character in your password increases the difficulty for hackers to hack it. Three, multi-factor authentication adds extra layer for security that is difficult for hackers to crack. To build a strong password policy, the construction of this password to be including a combination of capitals and minor characters, for intention, numerals, and symbols as well. At least 15 characters are required. Be distant from the other users' accounts. Never use dictionary terms. Never incorporate turning points. Encourage the use of passphrases, which include phrases in addition to the strong password principles to make password even more challenging to crack. I recommend implementing a two-factor authentication system for accessing sensitive information or system. This will add an extra layer of security behind just a password, and it will make more difficult for unauthorized individuals to gain access to our system. So what is a two-factor authentication? It is a specific type of multi-factor authentication that strengthens access security by requiring two methods, also referred to as authentication factor, to identify your identity. So why it is important? Two-factor authentication is a fundamental element to a zero trust security model. In order to protect your sensitive data, you must verify the users trying to get access and who they are. Suppose a remote hacker can interpret your computer internet access. In that case, they might obtain your password, and they can second verification can be sent via the identical role. Without your physical matching, remote attackers cannot implement you obtaining you want business networks, cloud service, and financial data. By incorporating a two-factor verification into your apps, attackers cannot enter to your accounts without any second factor that requires physical matching. So the authentication factors are, it validates a personal identification by demanding facts that he or she wouldn't know. A password must be relevant, example, the best identifier of authentication. Authenticates the users identify by requesting evidence of information that just the user should have. Thanks to offer frequency access of position authorization, users are required to take all the tokens, which are a rotation of password recently. Verify the identification of user by implementing qualities unique to that person. Nowadays, fingerprints recognitions have become more prominent in enhancing element. Verify the identification of a user depending on their geographic location. Change the moment of access attempt to confirm the user's true to identify. Another recommendation is having a recovery plan. The primary difference between a backup and a recovery that is a form is a copy of original data that I can be used in case of database pull-up, or while recovery is referred to the process of restoring your database that it, to it is correct, is saved when a fail occurs. The term backup refers to the duplicated relevance data containing database contents as a file system or control system. The recovery, on the other hand, allows to restore the information to proper state in case of that information has been lost. So it ensures the availability of your database by allowing to recover at a stable state following an unexpected attack. So what is a disaster recovery backup? It describes policies and practices to emphasize safe warning of an organization or company for any precaution in case of having a bad event, just breakdowns, cyber attacks, or natural disasters. Disaster recovery is critical for in establishing solutions allowing the company to recover any software data that would leave the business to continue as normal. In IT, disaster recovery is part of the security planning, and it is developed together with a business continuity plan. The following classes apply to disaster recovery mechanisms. The activity of prevent method to prevent occurrence of an incident. In case of a catastrophe or a further occurrence, correct a master I implement that to refer the system. The master concentrate in good recovery and recognizing undesirable occurrence. The security awareness training. These are programs usually used for companies to educate employees on best practices for cybersecurity, just as recognizing or reporting any suspicious emails, saving sensitive information using security passwords as well. So what it is? So security awareness training is a strategy of used by IT security professionals to prevent and mitigate user risk. So why it is important? Security awareness training reduces risk, reducing the loss for PII, IP, financial company reputation as well. According to Mimecast, about 90% of security breaches become from human mistakes. Practical cybersecurity awareness training covers the errors workers could be making while using email, the internet, or the real world, just a harassment or incorrect documentation source. Another recommendation is adding an incident response plan. So what is an incident response plan? It is a written document formally approved by the senior leadership team that will help your organization before, during, and after a confirmed and suspect incident, security incident. So why does the company need it? To protect the data, to keep the reputation and trust of the customer too, and for profit prevention as well. So before a cybersecurity incident, it is important to educate the personnel of the company to meet the regent CIS a team, consult the attorney before implementing the strategy as well, meet the members of the local law enforcement agency, as well as create an incident staffing and management plan, evaluate the agency the current one every 3 months, and plan a press comments in advance. Pick an external technical resources needed to evaluate possible vulnerabilities. During and after that cybersecurity incident, it is important to assign a crisis manager. They will match communication channel, keep the stakeholders informed, and assign assignments too. Not unless the manager have no technical responsibilities at the stress of a time of stress, time dilation offer the impression of passing the time. Design take a manager. This manager will act as a subject matter specialist. They will retain more internal and external technicals specialized. Design and communications director as well. This person will speak for the reports, provide social media updates, and might communicate with technical stakeholders as well. Review the rules and process depending on the meeting results. This is going to be after an incident, and share the results with the employees as well. Thank you so much. Have an amazing night.
Thank you. That was great. I should have my students watch this because they have to do a computer use policy. So that's definitely something to think about.
Thank you. Does awesome. Anyone have any questions? All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. That was a great job. Karen? You are our final presenter. Hello, ready? Take it away. Derek, you had a question? You're muted if you're trying to speak.
Oh, no, I'm good now. Thank you.
Oh, your hands up.
It won't go down. Okay, now it went down. <There you go.
laughs> All right.
Okay. Is this working? Are you able to see it?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Going here. Oh, wrong thing. Well, I don't know. Went to the other side. That'll work. Can you still see this okay? Will this work okay?
Yeah, I'm looking at the top there. I think you can go backwards.
Go over here to display. Oh, swap maybe?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
That's it.
All right, perfect. Okay. So I am doing cybersecurity. I'm going to talk about digital forensics. I'm kind of like a true crime junkie. So this is kind of like a best of both worlds for me. So to start out, what is digital forensics? It's the process of retrieving and analyzing electronic data that can be used for an investigation. So there are five different branches of digital forensics. Computer forensics focuses on recovering and preserving any evidence in a computer or storage device like hard drives or flash drives. The mobile device forensics focuses on recovering and preserving digital evidence in mobile and wearable devices. And that would be like smartphones, flash drives, fitness trackers, smartwatches, anything that's mobile. You're able to collect evidence off of that. Network forensics, that's going to be focusing on reviewing logs to determine the connection between an actual network and then any kind of criminal action that happens with it. Database forensics is going to focus on identification, collection, reconstructing, analysis, and reporting incidents that negatively impact the actual data integrity of something. And then forensics data analysis is going to focus on uncovering patterns of data that might like indicate fraudulent activity, especially when it comes to financial activity, like trying to take over a bank account or anything like that. Crypto is really big right now as far as identity, taking over identities and stealing bank information. There are two types of digital evidence that they kind of store different information in. The first is non-volatile data. This data is the kind of information that remains intact when the device is turned off. So say, for example, you have a computer, and if you were to turn it off, you would be able to access only read-only information, the ROM or the hard disk drive. So they could turn off the computer and you'd still be able to go in there, kind of take a look into the computer and get information from it. Volatile data is data that's lost if the device is turned off. An example of this would be if they did the process where it's a read and write or in the RAM or in cache memory. All of those, if once the information is turned off or a computer's turned off or any kind of electronic device, that information is lost and it's really, really hard to retrieve that. Almost impossible to retrieve. So it's easier if you have, if you're working with a non-volatile data, but of course that's not always an option. So the actual digital forensics process is identification, preservation, analysis, documentation, and presentation. For identification, the first step is to process the information that's included, like the evidence, where it was, where it was stored, how it was stored, and what kind of format it was in. Electronic storage can be like personal computers, mobile phones, things like that. And then you have preservation. In the preservation process, the data is isolated, secured, and preserved. So this would be where they collect all the information and they get it away from anybody so that no kind of evidence will be tampered with. So it can be used in cases where it goes up to court or anything like that. The next one is analysis. In this step, the investigation agents would reconstruct all the fragments of the data and pull conclusions based off of the evidence that they found. So this is where most of the process will happen. This is where they're going to find out the specific things that happened as far as the crime itself, and they start putting together theories of what's going on as far as collecting the data and using it for the crimes. Documentation. So this is a process where you record all the visible data that's created. So you can go in with a separate laptop or information or hard drive, and you can basically make a copy of everything that's already, for example, like on a computer, and store it separately so that you can go in and break it completely down and see if there's anything in there that's useful, any information or anything hiding that you can pull out of there. It's also where they would take pictures or sketching or mapping of any of the electronics and where they're at and as far as crime scenes. And then presentation, that's the last step. So that's the process of basically just summarizing everything into one explanation as to what you think happened as far as the crime scene itself, and giving them the best conclusion as to who you think it might be. So why is digital forensics important for cybersecurity? So one of the most famous cases that was solved was done by using digital forensics. So it's digital forensics has become something that is really huge now, just because with technology always evolving, people think that they're getting a little bit smarter at trying to get away with things, and digital forensics helps to stop that. So in the case of the BTK killer, Dennis Rader, it was actually digital forensics that helped to convict him. He was a serial killer that, you know, went around doing what he did up until about 1991. He killed around 10 people, and then he stopped for a while, but still wanted to get some attention. So he started sending letters over to a Fox TV affiliate. And he did ask if there was any way they could trace any information back if he were to send over a floppy disk with pictures of what he had done and things like that. And they told him no. So the way that they actually caught him was they used stored surveillance camera footage. So what they did with this surveillance camera was a nearby store they were able to get. It was kind of a grainy footage, but they were able to see that he dropped off the package and left in a black Jeep Cherokee. So they couldn't make out who he was because he was kind of blurry, but they were able to see what kind of vehicle he had. And then the big piece of evidence is the 1.44 MB floppy disk that was sent to the local Fox TV affiliate. So what happened with that was they were able to trace the information in the metadata that was in embedded into the deleted documents. So they went through the floppy and they were actually able to go to a deleted document that was in there in Microsoft Word. And they were able to pull out of that some words that were still left in that document that said Christ Lutheran Church. And that was where he had worked at. And they were also able to pull out information as to where the login had taken place and the computer that was used and the people that would have access to that computer. And so from there, once they were able to get all of that information and narrow it down to him, they actually asked his daughter if she could provide a DNA sample because they did have DNA off of a fingerprint of a victim. And with that evidence, with all of this evidence combined with the DNA match, that's how they were able to convict him of the actual murders that he did. And this was in 2005, so long time after he had stopped and he thought that he had gotten away with it. So in conclusion, so with the advancement of electronics being made, and there's a really big need in the field of digital forensics. So being able to find evidence in order to solve a problem or a case is needed to catch anyone, because like I said, criminals think that they're going to be able to get away with things now, but with the technology advancements that we have in tracking people down and using forensics to capture them, it's going to make it a lot harder for them, and it's really important that we have people that are able to help us catch them as well. So that's pretty much it. You have any questions?
Excellent job. This was great. So I have a question.
Sure.
Do you have to learn to be a hacker to be able to catch these guys?
No, you don't. So there's actually a lot of tools that you can use, and there's different software. There's actual things where you can plug into the computer, write everything over to it, and then you can take your time to break down what was in the computer and how it was accessed without having to hack it. It'll undo some things for you. There's some programs that'll knock that out for you. And there's actual ways where you can, like if you need to track something, like where they were at what time, just to plug everything back, you can go through permissions, of course, but you can get like satellite access where you can find out where their phone pinged off of, what time, where they were at, who they were calling, what they were doing. Even if they're in airplane mode, they're still able to track their information just based off of different pings. So there's a whole lot of different ways that you can track people down and use digital forensics to get more information without having to actually be like a hacker.
That's awesome. That's why I think they shouldn't have shows showing us how they do the digital forensics, because it's like you get to know how to, you know, you're going to get caught. Now, that one was easy enough because, of course, the metadata. You can always check the metadata.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, that was a given. But this, there's other things that just you just don't know about and you wonder. I'm like, stop telling us how to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways for them to track us that we don't know about, but I guess it's a good thing and a bad thing, depending on if you're on a good side or the bad side.
Right. It's an interesting story to watch, but you're like giving all the secrets away.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you guys did a great job. That was great, Karen. Very, very nice. Awesome. Thank you. That was a great topic. And everybody did a great job. I'm very proud of all of you. you picked some great topics. And we do have a lot of openings left for those that need it. I know everybody's going to be going on the 14th. So I think you guys are all caught up. There may be one or two that need to still do one. And you can stay along on the 16th if you want to get that done. There is some openings on the 16th for that. But there are openings left. And I thank you all very much for joining us on our masterclass this evening. And you guys did a great job. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.